everybody, to the Live from the Code Bar podcast recorded right here in Fenwood Manor. I have a very, very amazing special guest. In fact, I'm thinking of renaming the podcast to the Best Friends podcast because I'm having my absolute best friend in the world on the podcast right now. I want to introduce you all to Rob Frey from Germany. He is a adventurer. He is an archaeologist. He is a amazing person. And as I keep saying, he is my best friend. So, Rob, I'm glad to have you on. We're going to talk about some amazing things today. Particularly, we're going to talk about treasures in Prague in the Czech Republic. And we're going to go over some amazing tales. This is a new series that I'm going to have here at the podcast that we're going to have me and you talk a lot. This is the first of many. But I'm going to call these from the Journal of the Adventurer Rob Frey. And I just want you to go over everything from your journal because I know you've researched this. This is stuff that you're not going to find on Wikipedia. This is stuff that Rob has spent a long, long time researching. So it is something that you, the listener, are getting to hear for the first time probably. I know I searched this up myself, some of these things up on the web myself, and there's not a lot. So Rob is going to fill in a lot of gaps that you're not going to find online that he's researched himself, and this is especially from him. So thank you for coming on, Rob, and go ahead.
Thanks for having me. It's always nice to be at a Code Bar with my bestest of friends. Yeah.
Well, I just want to give a little bit of context about obviously me and you and our best friends. I know a lot of people listen to the Code Bar and obviously know that last October I went to England, and it's out there now that I went over there to search for treasure, and you were on the team, the Areas Grade team, with me. You came from Germany. I came from the US. We all went to the UK to visit. We were obviously all going to be on the Expedition Unknown episode. So we're all fun with that. But apart from that episode, we were there for close to 2 weeks. And during 2 weeks, we were there. We spent about 10 days together searching for this treasure. Apart from obviously what people are going to see when they watch the show, we were actually looking for treasure, and we had some amazing times searching and just looking around the area and the research and the history of the area where we were searching as well. But long before we actually met up in the UK, we'd obviously done some talking and researching together as well. So we've been working together for a while. It was amazing to meet you, and just that 10 days we spent together cemented our friendship forever. So bring you on, and like I said, these are stories only from your journal, so people are going to get a real treat today.
Yeah. I don't know about you, but every time I go on an expedition on a treasure hunt or maybe some excavation, I always like have those handwritten journals, and I just love that old school vibe of this. If you just like find something, or you just have your notes, and then you see something when you're in the actual place, and then you write it down, and then the clues connect when you're actually in the place. It's such an amazing feeling. That's why I love that we're doing this now, to like have a real journal, to getting like a podcast out of it. It's amazing.
Exactly. Now that was funny you bring that up, because when we were there, you, Adam, me, we all had little notebooks, all writing things in when we were there, like taking notes, and we all had laptops, or most of us had laptops or iPads or something like that, but we were all writing stuff down in journals, because it is, for me personally, the first time I ever watched Indiana Jones and The Last Crusade, and that he brings out his dad's Grail diary. For me, that was, ever since then, any notes that I've taken down for anything, whether I'm doing an armchair treasure hunt or whether I'm doing, you know, something else, I'll write the notes down. I find it easier to write than type. So I'll always write everything out. And if I need to, I'll scan the page rather than typing it up, because I would rather do that. But I've always, like you just said, I've always put things down in journals, because it just, for me, I can pick that back up and look at it and go, ah, yeah, that's what I was doing then. And that, I love that.
Do you remember when we were sitting in the living room of our accommodation, we're just like having this map of our area in front of us, and everybody was sitting around with their journal, and I was like working on this part, you were like working this part, and then Adam was like, oh yeah, we could do this, and then we'd like put our journals together.
Treasure legends that we'd read about in a certain area, and we were marking them off on the map, and how we were going to research them and look at them. No, it was amazing, because we came together as a group of people that didn't know each other, and we're all in different locations. Obviously, I've mentioned that you were in Germany. I'm here in the US. Adam with Areas Gray is in the UK. And we worked together for a while trying to solve all the clues for the treasure that we were looking at when we'd put them together. And I know people have done this for like true crime. You know, the investigators have got together to solve an unsolved cold case and they've combed the internet and they've done it. I felt like that's what we were doing, but for treasure. So when we finally all got together and we were in the UK, I don't want to spoil our area just yet in case somebody hasn't watched the episode, if it has aired by this time. You will know once you see the episode of Expedition Unknown, and you'll also know what treasure we're going after. But when we were there and we were able to just chat all the time, and all the car rides that we took, the near deaths that we took, on those small little side roads that, I mean,
they're not over that, huh?
I'll share with our listeners a little story. So on one of the last days we were in the UK together in our area, we were down in the southwest. We were down in the Cornwall area. Okay. So I will say that because you've probably seen the show already if you're listening to this. We decided on the last day we were going from our accommodation, which we'd given up because we were no longer staying down there. We all decided, there was five of us. We decided to go to Tingagel Castle, home of, birthplace of King Arthur, supposedly. So we were driving up this like massive highway, and it was me, you, and Tony, the other archaeologist, and in the other car was Adam and, his girlfriend, and we were just driving along, and it was a nice little highway. And then we lost track of where Adam was, took a wrong turn, and then we got back on the highway. I was following the GPS, and then all of a sudden the GPS says, take the next left off the highway. We did that, and we got onto this little tiny side road, and I'm already spending, you know, maybe 7 or 8 days driving on the wrong side of the road from what I'm used to from here in the US. I'm driving this little car on these little tiny roads. I was at one point on this road, because I didn't even know if we were going to the right place, I was almost freaking out. And then at one point we got to a junction where there was cars coming the other way, and this like VW bus, rusted bus, was coming up.
Like those old school hippie buses, right?
Hippie bus, yeah. It was coming up next to us, and he wouldn't get it out of our way. So we had to back up, and he came so close. And as he was driving, we went into a little alcove. As he was driving by, he was looking at us like we did something wrong, when clearly he should have given way to us. We had to back up a whole ton away, and we just kept going. I was ready to melt down. I was. And then you and Tony in the back calmed me down, and we got to the castle, had an amazing time there. And then from there, we drove all the way into London together. An amazing trip. But that one little moment, I was ready to get out and push that van off to the side myself. Like I was just so tiny, and it was a rental car. A lot of our safety, I had the thought of the safety of the rental car. Like, if I total this rental car, I didn't get the extra insurance.
Tony and I, still, when we drive like narrow roads, we look at each other and are like, Rob couldn't do that. Yeah, but we have an off-roader, so we drive a lot of like off-road small roads, and every time we go to like a real narrow place, like some castle ruins or something, we were like, yeah, Rob couldn't drive that.
I love it. So let's get to the idea of what we were talking about today. Obviously, the first couple of stories that we're going to talk about are treasures in Prague that come from your journal. Like I said, there's not too much of this on the internet, so people are going to learn about this, you know, especially here, which is awesome. So I'm just going to let you take it away and tell your stories here today, because like anything, you're the best storyteller out there. So go ahead.
I hope I don't mess up and stumble across my own words and such. Yep. The reason I went to Prague was, I think it was just like a side note in an article I wrote about the Jesuit treasure in Prague. I was like, okay, that sounds interesting. I was going with some friends to Prague, and I was just like telling them, yeah, we're going to have a nice time. But actually, I was just like looking for some treasure on the side. So I got to tell you the story now of everything that I found out about the Jesuit treasure of Prague. It actually starts with, like, I would say, like, some of those crazy stories you hear at the pub. There's this stonemason that was in Prague in 1773. And he was hired by someone. He didn't actually know who it was because it was just like some letter and some location that he was supposed to wait. I think it was the bridge in Prague, the big bridge they have there. And he was waiting there, and then a chariot arrived. And the chariot, there was some hooded figures in there, and they stepped out and they talked to him a bit, and they taught him that they have to blindfold him to bring him to the location where he's supposed to work. He was a bit hesitant, of course, at first, but they paid his wages up front, which was really uncommon at the time, and they promised him to get another payment when he's done the work. So he did it. He got into the chariot, got like blindfolded. They drove around a bit, and then they got him out. And when he was started walking, he apparently was in, he was feeling that he was like going inside. It wasn't cold anymore. The wind was gone. So he knew he was inside, and he walked a bit. And every time they did a turn, they didn't turn like right or left. They just like spun him around a bit. And they was like, I think they, those hooded figures, they like whispered in his ear all of the time, so to confuse him as well. And
so he didn't know where he was.
Exactly. And they brought him to a really dark floor where they put the blindfolds off him, and they pointed to some rocks and some material, and they were like, "You see this floor right here, this corridor, you have to wall it up." Didn't have much of a choice. He didn't know where he was, so he just did the work. I think he took him almost all night. It was still dark when he finished, but of course he couldn't tell because he was in this dark corridor. I think he had 3 candles. The story says like something about 3 or 4 candles, so he was also in some time pressure for the light to run out. And when he was finished, one of the hooded figures put the blindfold on again, and they brought him out of the building. But before he like left the building, he heard some bells ringing, and then he was like, okay, that sounds familiar, strangely familiar for someone who's living in Prague. So he kind of put together a location that it must be somewhere near the monastery, the Clementinium it's called. That's the Latin word for the monastery there in Prague. And they brought him back to the chariot. They drove around a bit, and they left him out, not at the place they picked him up, so somewhere, I think it was somewhere in the middle of the old city. They just kicked him out, gave him his money, and sent him on his merry way. If something like this happened to you, you want to talk about it, because it's freaky as hell. Like,
yeah, you have this story that you got to share, especially, like you said, in a pub or having a few drinks, you know.
Exactly.
You'd want to tell the story of, hey, I, you know, worked all night in this weird place, they blindfolded me, you know. So. Yeah.
I mean, that's something you have to tell, especially in a bar. So that's actually what he did. It was still dark out. It wasn't that late as he thought it was. So he was just like heading straight back, not straight back, but like headed straight to his favorite bar, to his favorite pub, sat down, and he was a bit distraught. So someone like gave him something to drink, and then he started to warm up and tell the story. And for like a few days, it was just like this story of the crazy stonemason was like apparently abducted. Today it would be aliens, but back then it was just hooded figures, right? And a few days later, something happened. Pope Clement XIV, who abolished the Jesuit order, and he was just like, don't need those guys anymore. They're like, they always wear like weird hooded figures, abducting people at night. That's not cool. So he said, okay, I'm going to abolish that order, and I'm going to seize all of their treasure, because treasures are nice. I mean, otherwise this podcast wouldn't be, right?
Exactly. There isn't a code bar.
So, after the Pope gave his orders, the soldiers of Prague went to the Clementinium, to the monastery, and they told the monks, okay, you have to go out of the city. You're not protected anymore by the Pope, by the church, so you have to go. and you leave everything behind. So the Jesuits had to leave the city of Prague, and the soldiers were searching the Clementinium for all of the wealth that the monks had left behind, because the monks actually were pretty rich. They had something that Prague was actually not as famous for as the main thing they're famous for, which is alchemy, but it was astronomy, because the Jesuit monks, they were astronomers, and they had like this huge tower, and they had some expensive gear there to date down everything and write down everything, document everything they researched to give to the king, and the king had his scientists and his researchers, and there was like a little bit of going back and forth between them. So they thought, okay.
The Clementinium that we're talking about, that was the main Jesuit monastery in Prague at the time.
Yes.
And I will say this, when I did my research on this, at the time, it was the third largest Jesuit monastery, I want to say, in the Western world.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think it was the biggest one, and they were more into the astronomy and the scientific stuff. The other Jesuits were more in like a humanitarian way of the order they had. So they had some money, because they don't only get like some donations to them, or they actually sold something. They sold knowledge. So they had some money. But when the soldiers from Prague went through the Clementinium, they just found like bits of pieces there, but they knew it wasn't as much, because the soldiers actually carried some payment from the king to the Clementinium, so they knew some stuff was there. And the soldiers actually were posted at the bridge that's like right in front of the Clementinium, so they knew that it wasn't going out. No one was like carrying big carriages of treasure out, so it still must be there. So they looked up and down the Clementinium, searched for days, couldn't find it. And then they heard the story about our stonemason that was adopted by those hooded figures. And so they got to him. They found our stonemason. They talked to him, and he was telling them about the bells that he hearing at his strange experience, and that it must be the Clementinium, probably, because it's the only, like, one of the only places there that had some bells there. And also, why wouldn't they? The Jesuits probably knew that the Pope was thinking about abolishing them and like driving them out of the city.
Similar to the Templars, you know.
Yeah, similar to the Templars.
Disappeared because they knew something big was coming with the King of France, so they shipped their treasure off before they were all captured. So a very similar story to that.
Exactly, and so the soldiers of Prague, they now knew that there must be some walled up corridor. So they looked all over the place, but they still couldn't find that corridor. So treasure never was found. And that's basically the story so far. Now, here's the thing. The Jesuits came back 50 years later. And now you would think, okay, if they come back, they probably knew where they hid the treasure and they would get it back. But the Jesuits never had like the wealth they had before. They were relying so much on donations back in those days. They had the astronomy, but now that the king didn't need them for the 50 years, he had his own research, so they couldn't sell their former knowledge. So they needed something new. Because they're a Jesuit order, they built up some hospitals, like people could come with their little illnesses and they would help them. So they needed like day-to-day jobs, like they did everything to get some money. So they never either refound their treasure. It was lost, or the place they couldn't get to anymore. Mm-hmm. Or 50 years back then wasn't like one lifetime, it was probably like two. So maybe everybody who knew where exactly the treasure was already dead or gone. Yeah.
So obviously this treasure is more than just gold and silver and stuff like that. There could be knowledge that's hidden. Who knows? Because this is a major time of discovery for a lot of things, especially when it comes to astronomy. So who knows what they could have seen and found that when it is found, that can sort of change history, I guess you could say, because who knows what could be there. So it's more than just, and that's a point I've made a couple of times before on the podcast, the treasure is more than just gold and jewels. Treasure is what you want to find. You know, it could be a scroll. One of my earliest things that I remember, and I remember telling you guys about it when we were on the trip, but one of the things I really remember when I was reading a book, and I really got into it when I first started getting into archaeology and treasure and stuff like that. And it was a book about the Library of Alexandria.
Yeah.
And to me, I was looking at that, and I've always had an interest in knowing what was there. You know, this thing, it had no jewels. It had no gold. It was scrolls. It was knowledge. It was either lost in the fire, or it was hidden and stolen and buried and hidden. It sparked my interest to say, hey, you know, if it was hidden, where? And is it still something that can be found? So I had an interest in this sort of thing from the very beginning, that knowing that you can get so much more from treasure than just the wealth of it, that's for sure.
Yeah. As I work as an archaeologist, so I sometimes get the question, why do we need archaeology? And I knew when I started, it was just like, it's so awesome, you learn about history, but a lot of people don't care about the history. And then, especially during the pandemic, I did a bit of like more asking around my colleagues and such. And there was like this moment someone told me, yeah, we could learn so much from when the plague happened, how the people back then handled it, how they were like getting more clean. And that's why we nowadays know how to like react to something like this or act with this or live with it, and how long it took then and how long it would take now. And that's some knowledge that we learned from that, that archaeologists found out and that we could like use nowadays. And that's not just like for the plague and for the pandemic. It's just for so many other things. We had at one point, I think it was, I was working at a Roman villa, and they showed me like this big wooden structure. And I didn't know what it was. And they're like, it's a crane. I'm like, it's a crane. And then they showed me how it's done. And then they showed me some pictures of modern cranes that worked exactly the same. And it's just, you see how much we learn from the past. That knowledge that we get from the past that we already know helps us so much in our everyday life. And when you think about the lost knowledge from the Library of Alexandria, as you mentioned, or the scrolls that the Jesuit monks hid in the Clementinium, just imagine what we can do with this nowadays.
Yeah. They might have discovered a planet that we still didn't see until generations later, and it was always there before, you know, it's always been there, of course, but it was seen by these people way before we even knew about it, you know, and it could just change the history books by something like that. So obviously this treasure has never been found. There, from what I'm reading and obviously from your journal, has there been recent, and I say recent as in like going back for a while, has there been any recent searches or any ideas, you know, whether this is a tale of, you always hear these sorts of tales, you know, oh, they knew that they were going down, so they hid their treasure sort of thing. We talked about the Templars, you know, nobody's ever found a Templar treasure. And so is that just a story that people liked it to say because that treasure was never found, or did it really happen? You know, so has there been any recent talk or anything like that when it comes to this sort of treasure, this treasure particularly, sorry?
Yes. When I was in Prague, I think it was 3 years ago, I was, I probably wasn't as smooth as I thought I was, because I was asking the tour guide of the Clementinium a lot of questions, but like weird questions like, when was the last renovations, and like how thick is the screed and such. And he was like, you know about the treasure, didn't you, boy? Like, Yeah, I do. He was like, when he started there, he actually get some time off to like wander around the Clementinium. So he actually was like looking around the whole place and was like knocking on the walls, like, okay, this wall looks a bit weird. So he's like knocking. And he said he didn't find anything, but he was talking to like the older colleagues of his. And apparently every tour guide knows about the Treasures legend. And they just, when they have an idea, they just look for it. So you could basically say that the search for this treasure is like ongoing since the day they started using the whole Clementinium for tourism. Because those guys, they are as interested in history and they know the treasure because they're like specific for this area. So they, when they have like an idea, they're like, ah, yeah, right. And then they just like look for another door, or they just look for, there's this one story about a young shoemaker that was in the 50 years the Jesuit monks were gone, that he was like also hearing about the story from the abandoned stonemason. Poor lad. Isn't he? And he was like hearing that story.
Drinks bought for him for the rest of his life.
Probably. He can't hear it anymore. People go like, come on, tell the story about the hooded figures again. yeah, there was this young shoemaker who heard the story. He probably connected the dots because the Jesuits were driven out of the city and they didn't find the wealth they had. So he was just like looking around when no one was looking. And he was in the garden of the Clementinium, and he was just like digging holes, like good old treasure hunting. Just maybe there's something dig here, maybe there's something there. And he actually supposed to be had found a stone slab with like metal knob attached to it. And it was, because it was a stone slab, was so heavy, he couldn't get it out. And he was like getting some tools, and before he could like handle it open, he heard the bells of another church in town. That specific bell and the specific time didn't tell him what time it was, but actually that there was an attack on the city or something happening at that part. And the young shoemaker actually lived in that part. So he was like, ah, something could happen to my family. And when he stood up, he supposedly saw the ghost of a Jesuit monk to tell him to just bugger off. I mean, maybe if you're in a place you're not supposed to be and you hear something, then you go a bit like, you know, paranoid. So maybe you could just have imagined it and just like run away.
We've got lots of people that listen to the podcast, and I'm sure that the secret listeners, the secret casks, they probably dig in for that thing in a place that they shouldn't be. They hear a noise. They're going to move away. So maybe they're not going to go to the Jesuit, but, you know, maybe they're seeing a policeman instead. But people, treasure hunters can be scared off by lots of different things. There's lots of different stories of treasure hunters being scared off by different apparitions, you know, stuff like that. So that's a really cool story. So it's still there. Nobody go knocking any doors or walls down in the Clementinium. We're not saying do that. But if you're interested in learning a little bit more, go out there and research. It's an interesting story, of course.
Yeah, if you actually are interested into the treasure of the Clementinium, maybe want to do your own expedition to go there, because of the story of the shoemaker that he found it in a garden, there were a lot of renovations going on at the Clementinium. So the place nowadays doesn't look as it did those 300, 400 years ago. But there's another cool story about Prague, and it's actually one of my favorite museums in the whole world. There was a big flood, I think it was 2014, in Prague, which actually is a sad thing, but for an archaeologist, if something was like swept away, some new stuff comes out. And at that point, 2014, when they did like the repairing for the flood, they actually found in the city, in the old quarters of the city, at the same place that the Clementinium is, or pretty close, they found an alchemist laboratory, because Prague actually is famous back then, I think it was since the 1500s, for alchemy, which sounds like witchcraft, but back in the day, kings and like leaders of different countries in Europe, actually, they had their own like alchemists who, they all had the same job, make me some gold. I mean, who wouldn't want that?
Okay.
And
even just gold, but alchemy was lots of things, turning obviously lead into gold, but obviously you're going to mention a bit like Nicholas Flamel and the whole idea of the everlasting life, Count of Saint Germain, even, you know? So yeah, there's lots of stories of alchemists doing more than just trying to become rich by making gold. They had, and that's why there's all these laboratories and like you said, Prague was famous for these sorts of things.
Yeah, the nickname for Prague back in the day actually was the Golden City, because they hired so many alchemists, and the particular laboratory that was like flooded open from the flood was underground. It was underground. It was basically in a sewer system that the city doesn't use anymore. So there is some theory that the Jesuit treasure maybe actually was in the place from the Clementinium that was led underground to one of the sewer systems. Mm-hmm. So you could still get it, but then we'll go back to the legal side of treasure hunting. You would need some permits for that.
Yep.
And the city, I don't know if they're happy to have some people going around in the sewer system of Prague.
Hey, you know, there could be another flood one day, and it could open up by itself. You know, they could, instead of an alchemy laboratory, they could find this walled treasure of the Jesuits.
Could be. Get back to the my favorite museum, this alchemy laboratory that was now fully accessible. They actually built into the, like, it was a medieval house that was standing on top of it. They built some really, really cool museum in there. You go in there and it looks like a typical medieval house. And I was getting actually a bit late to the tour there. And I was just getting into, and the lady was like wearing this like cool medieval dress. And she's like, latecomer. It's okay. I didn't start yet. Then she was like putting her hand on a book on the bookshelf. And she was like pulling the book, and the whole bookcase was swing open. And then we were working like this, the steps down to the underground system. And then she's like, and this, ladies and gentlemen, is the real laboratory. And that's such a cool thing to start. I mean, that's a pretty epic move.
This whole back cave, like just epic, like the whole hidden bookshelf, like, secret passage. Who wouldn't want that in their own home? And then your own secret laboratory as well.
Yeah. And then she showed like those, that the everything that was on this first room with the bookcase was just like replicas of the actual things they found underground. There was like some vials, some glasses, actually some liquids still, and some scrolls and some tablets. And you could really see where they had 4 different chambers, and on every chamber had something else as a subject. One that had some metals, they were working on metals, so you could actually say maybe they were trying to get some gold there. Then the other one was like really strong smell of alcohol and a lot of bottles and such in different heights. And they probably did the elixir of youth thing that also was a big thing there, like you said, mentioned with Nicholas Flamel. And every chamber had some different subject. It was really, really amazing. And when I was going back up to the main room, I was talking to the lady who owns the place, the museum, and I was like, I'm an archaeologist. I never have seen anything like this ever before. I never even heard about that. And she was like, it's cool. And we talked a bit. And then she was like, you know what? Here, I'm going to sell you this one, because I wanted to have some something to buy from the place, like in a museum store. And she was giving me this viola. This one. And she said, okay, that's actually from the old recipe. They had to change the recipe in, I think it was 2017 or something, because some things they couldn't get anymore was like for the economical part. Because, Prague was like, yeah, we could do this, but it's such bad for the environment to produce this certain ingredient. So just use something else. And I was really happy to get like the original recipe. It's pretty cool.
Recipe of this. This is the elixir from an alchemist in Prague.
Yeah, and they sold it in those bottles that look like really old time. It's like pretty cool.
That's an awesome story. I would die seeing something like that. I really would. It's just like, and to know that it was like hidden there, just nobody knew for how long, you know, and then, you know, found and restored, like you said, so people can actually visit and see it. So what an awesome place.
That's true. I really want to go back there. It's one of those once in a lifetime things you can see. I mean, the effect probably isn't as good as the first time she was putting the book, but still.
Yes, no, exactly. Yeah, that first experience of you're in this place and then all of a sudden she's like, secret passage right here. It's got to be something. It's like the first time you go on a ride at Disneyland or anywhere of these places, you know, you're not expecting, you don't know what the ride is.
And yeah.
Then it's like, wow. And then you do it again, it's like, it's still a good ride, but I don't have that same first time experience that you have when you're jumping on it for the first time.
Now that you mentioned it, I probably spoiled it for a lot of people.
Hey, you know, they're still gonna. I would still go.
Yeah,
that's for sure.
I just realized because we were talking about alchemy, I got some other not really treasure, but you know, treasure is sometimes something. You can debate what a treasure is and what isn't.
Yep.
We were talking about Nicholas Flamel. And Nicholas Flamel is the most prominent alchemist in the world, or was. We don't know if he's still alive. He was working on the Philosopher's Stone, didn't he? And he had a partner called John Dee. John Dee was a British man. I think he was from London, and he was working for the Queen a while, but apparently he was, let's say it nicely, a nutter. And he was exiled from England, so he moved to France where he met Nicholas Flamel, and together they did some really, 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 really weird experiments. They were both getting in trance, and then they were I think they locked themselves in a chamber in a church, and John Dee said that he was a medium, that he could talk with ghosts and angels and such. And John Dee was just like high as a kite and babbling about. And Nicholas Flamel was writing everything down, and they came up with the language called Enochian, the angel talk. And they had, I think it was one journal each. So one had Nicholas Flamel and the other one had John Dee. And because John Dee did some weird shit with Nicholas Flamel, France also said, you know what, you're too weird, we also exile you. So where do you go as an alchemist? To the Golden City, of course, to Prague. And John Dee went to Prague. There he was sweet talking to the king. He's like, he had this big breakthrough with Nicholas Flamel. And the king was like, you know what, let's try it. You have a few months to get me the elixir of youth, because the king of Prague back in those times was obsessed with like eternal life, because back then religion was so huge that they thought if they are immortal, then they are like getting gods themselves, like the pharaohs used to say. So the king gave John Dee his own laboratory in the I forgot the word again. What was it? Not the basement. The penthouse, exactly. A penthouse. And John Dee was pretty sure that at this point he was addicted and still high as a kite, and was just working on his weird experiments. There's actually some letters from the neighbors to the king that the penthouse was like glowing at the night, and there was some bashes, some bangs all the time. So the king was like, okay, I gave him a few months, so he waited a few months, and then when John Dee didn't deliver his gold or his elixir of youth, the king actually got him arrested. And there's also another museum about that, John Dee's old lab, and they had some really amazing wax figure of John Dee with like crazy hair and like panicked expression on his face, like hiding behind some pillar and just looking for the king's guard to come in. And that's also pretty cool. So maybe John Dee hit his journal with the Enochian script, the original that he had somewhere in Prague as well, because he was exiled in France, so maybe he was crazy as hell, so he
that,
probably...
That one's like a treasure that's just for the code bar like that. It's a treasure. It'd be amazing to find something like that. And it's got a code in there that, you know, you can break and maybe you'll find the, you know, elixir of youth. So, hey, what better of a treasure to find than that?
That's true. But I'm pretty sure the elixir of youth, like with the recipe from a madman, would taste quite right. You know what I mean?
Hey, I mean, we've all drunken things that we shouldn't have, I'm sure.
Ah, preach it.
Well, that was an awesome story. I love it.
Yeah, that's actually the two things I was looking for when I was in Prague. There's some other cool things outside of Prague, like there is this national park. They had some huge, I think it was trolls and monster figurines and statues cluttered about. But the thing that why they choose this particular national park to put this artwork in there is because they used to find like little roots that was twisted in a way that they looked like monsters. Also, if you're near Prague and you're mobile, you can visit that as well. It's not treasure, but still like something amazing to see.
Excellent. Now, I know you've got something special for us as well. We wouldn't be the code bar, and we haven't done this a lot lately. I know we wouldn't be the code bar unless we had a very special drink that is going to go on the code bar menu. So why don't you tell us about this one?
I thought I'd go with the theme. You know, we're talking a lot about alchemy, and I think cocktail mixing is a bit like alchemy. I mean, you can, if you make a really good one, you can make someone do like all sorts of things.
Yeah, add something in there, anybody will do anything.
Yeah, I mean, tequila is also like an elixir that like makes you lose your pants. So I thought I'd bring up a cocktail that actually is called The Alchemist, and I got the recipe right here for you, so if anybody want to try it, I think it sounds pretty good. It's 1.5 ounces of Scotch whiskey. Maybe take a good one, or if you just want to try it, maybe a cheaper one. Then 1 ounce of Lillet Blanc, 1/2 ounce of blood orange liquor, then 2 dashes of orange bitters, and then some lemon twist as garlic. As garnish, not garlic. Ugh, don't put garlic in your drink, dude. That, come on. There's actually not that much preparation you need for the cocktail. You just like put all of your ingredients into a mixing glass, and then you slowly put ice into it, and you squirt it. And then you just garnish it with your lemon twist.
Very nice. Now, you're going to give me the recipe, of course, and we're going to put that on both, like I said, the code bar menu on our website, and it will be in the show notes as well. Well, Rob, I can't say enough, but I want to thank you for coming on. And this is, we talked about this before, but this is going to be the first of many new podcasts that we're going to do. As I keep saying, it's from your journal. These are actual notes of places that you've researched and you've noticed and that you've even been to that have treasure or just really cool adventure stories associated with them that people wouldn't be able to just read about if they just go online. So it's not something that you're going to be able to find on Wikipedia or something like that. It's something that is only going to come from a true adventurer that's already done the research and been there for you. So, Rob, you're going to be on this podcast a lot, and like I said, I might even just change it to the Best Friends Net podcast.
That would be so amazing.
Obviously, it's been an amazing, and you pointed this out before we even recorded. This is the first time that we've had an all Rob podcast.
Yeah, 100% pure Rob.
Exactly.
I mean, what other podcast can like beat that?
Hey, they're not going to beat that. That's for sure.
Nobody can.
So, again, I want to thank you for coming on, and we look forward to the next time we have you on. Enjoy the rest of your day. I know you're in Germany, so obviously it's coming into the evening now. But you have a great rest of your day, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm looking so much forward to our next podcast episodes. I have so much else to tell you, so many cool stories, a lot of Asian treasures, and of course some pirate treasures that we talked about a lot in the past, but first time recorded it. It's going to be so cool.
And can't wait for next time. So thank you very much.
Thanks.
All right, fans. So once again, we have come to the end of another show. For all the information that doesn't make it into the podcast, as well as the links and the alchemist recipe that was mentioned in the show, please make sure you visit our show notes, and please don't forget to like us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, all with the handle @CodeBarLive. Make sure that you follow Rob. I'm going to put his handle and information into the show notes, as well as Areas Grey. That's Areas Grey with G-R-E-Y. They are a huge part of making this show what it is. Please subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts, and please help the podcast by growing by leaving a rating and review, especially on the big one, Apple Podcasts. And until next time, everyone, keep digging.